Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award winning Niall Boylan Show.
The news is dominated by the Queen of England. Most people, by the way, around Ireland and around the world are very sad to hear the loss of an elderly woman, realistically, 96 years of age. And the long reign of Queen Elizabeth II was marked by her strong sense of duty, I suppose, and her determination to dedicate her life to the throne and to the British people. I mean, she performed her duties for, what, 70 years and literally swore in her final Prime Minister, Liz Truss, less than 2 days before she died. So you can't really argue, you know, she died, or should I say, she worked right up to the time she died. And she did it with a smile and she did it with grace. Even the other day, her last photograph, she was very cautious of that, by the way. She didn't really want the cameras in for the last day. And most people would have noticed, of course, that she looked extremely frail. You know, over the last 4 months, she hadn't been seen in 2 months in public. And her success in maintaining the monarchy through such turbulent times, I suppose, was even more remarkable, given that at the time of her birth, no one could have foreseen that the throne would be her destiny for 70 years. So Elizabeth Windsor was born in 1926 in a house just off Berkeley Square in London. The first child of Albert, Duke of York. You've heard of him, haven't you? The grand old Duke of York. He had 10,000 men. The other song. Second son of George and his Duchess, the former Lady Elizabeth Bowes Lyon. And she'll now be replaced, of course, by King Charles, who had the option to change his name if he wanted to. He could have been George or Henry or whatever he wanted to be, but he's stuck with Charles. He's Charles III. And I don't know if he'll be as popular as his mother. I have a funny feeling he won't be. A lot of people are of the opinion that he might not do it for very long and he might pass it over to William. But anyway, we'll find out. Maybe he will, because the man is not well himself. As many have seen or noticed lately, he has arthritis, particularly in his hands. And all evening, or yesterday evening, should I say, I watched social media and the commentary from both Ireland and Britain. I thought Jedward's comments online were quite despicable, so much so that the Daily Mail picked it up. They were insensitive. They were disgusting, suggesting that Liz Truss had passed on something to her or something like that when she shook her hand and all this nonsense. Really, really going on about Irish politics and Irish history. They're just, look, there's a time and a place for a conversation. You know, the President of Ireland, of course, passed on his condolences straight away. Obviously, a statement already done. Micheál Martin did post a statement for the Taoiseach of Ireland and said, "Our world is a poorer place for her passing, but a far richer and better place as a result of her long life and enduring contributions." And the Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou, also posted a carefully worded condolences, but condolences nonetheless, which would be difficult, I suppose, coming from a Republican point of view. And she said to the royal family and all who mourn her death, the death of Queen Elizabeth, especially Irish Unionists, I extend my sincere sympathy. She lived a long, full life, and her lifetime relationships between our countries were changed and changing. And I salute her contribution to this transformation. Now, although many of the comments, or most of the comments, should I say, online have been wonderful, they've been sincere, they've been lines of condolences from all world leaders and countries and people, generally be it on Twitter or social media of any description, some of the comments have been quite disrespectful, disgusting and nasty. And unnecessary, to be honest with you. And I also noticed that so many of the nasty comments were under, you know, Irish high-profile people who had passed genuine condolences to the British people. All the most, really most of the comments, I'll be honest with you, were respectful. And people appreciated the fact, of course, that the Queen visited Ireland back in 2011. And she told guests at the time in Dublin Castle, ironically enough, which was the headquarters of the British Army, if you go back in time. But she told people there in Dublin Castle in 2011 when she made her very famous speech, you know, people from Northern Ireland and the southern communities were there. And she said it was sad and regrettable reality that through history, our islands have experienced more than their fair share of heartache, turbulence and loss. And she went on to say, with the benefit of historical hindsight, we can all see things that we wish we'd been done differently, or maybe not at all, which I thought was not an apology, but as close as you're going to get to it. Well, cleverly worded to some degree. Most people seem to have moved on from our history with Britain. And although we will never forget the past, we put it into our history books. And hopefully we can move forward and learn from it with an hopefully unending peace on our island. But others seem intent on causing friction and passing on that bigotry and hatred for the Britain, you know, to their sons and daughters. And now is not the time. Tomorrow is not the time. And in fact, there will never be a time for hatred, that kind of bigotry and sectarianism. And I agree with freedom of speech, but there's a time and a place, and I don't believe today or yesterday in particular was the time. So I'm going to be asking you a question. The question I want to ask you is, do you think that Ireland should have a day of mourning to mark the respect to the Queen? Now, I think, as far as I know, it hasn't been announced yet in Britain, but I think there'll be 3 days of mourning in Britain. When I say official, there's actually 10 days of mourning, but 3 days where people will have time off work. They haven't announced it yet, but that was the original plan when they said, I think it was called, wasn't it, Operation Tower Bridge or London Bridge. I think that was the plan, that they were going to have 3 days of official mourning where people would take time off work and all services would be closed. But should Ireland, as a mark of respect for our nearest neighbours, and very close neighbours, should we have a day of mourning? Because a lot of people live in this country are from Britain. A lot of people here respect the royals, by the way. You mightn't think it, but some do. The number is 087-188-0008. I also caught up with Derek Byrne, who's an academic and a journalist and has his own kind of interesting story in relation to the Queen. Good afternoon to you, Derek.
Hello, Niall. How are you?
A sad day, of course, for the British people. Mind you, an inevitable day. And in somehow, smiling is not such a bad thing to celebrate the life, 96 yeah. years or 70 years, you know, on the throne of, I suppose, what British people believe was a great woman. And many people around the world, in the Commonwealth, etc., would believe was a great yeah. woman. But you had your own personal experience because you had 6 years of correspondence between 2013 and 2019 with the Queen. So how did that start?
Yeah, like the Queen, I'm a descendant of the Plantagenets. So I trace my own ancestry on my mother's side from six Plantagenet kings. One of my ancestors, the Right Honourable Francis Agard, is buried at Christchurch Cathedral, and there's a monument to him just inside the south transept. And so the cathedral asked me to write a book on him. Fundamentally. So I was doing some research and I wrote to the Office of Buckingham Palace looking to see, you know, could I get some information? And I got a lovely letter back from the office. And at the same time, I discovered that my ancestor and Queen Elizabeth I were very close childhood friends and remained friends all their lives, and came across a letter from Elizabeth I stating how sad she was to hear of his death. So I thought, this is very interesting. My ancestor and Elizabeth I were writing to each other 500 years ago, and here I am getting correspondence from the current queen. So I wrote back to her, and lo and behold, I got a lovely letter back. And that started the whole thing, and I would kind of send a St. Patrick's Day card or, you know, or a letter.
Anyway, are you telling me that the Queen was like a pen pal?
Kind of like a pen pal, actually. Yeah, well, over the 6 years, I just counted the letters earlier on. There were 10 of them altogether.
Okay.
And, you know, could be very consequential or could be, you know, something, you know, quite witty. For example, around the time of her 65th anniversary, I love searching in flea markets and old secondhand shops and stuff. And I came across a lovely print of John Lavery's portrait of her grandmother, Queen Mary. So I thought, you know what, I'll send this over to her. And sure enough, I was basically saying, look, I'm sure you've got the original somewhere. But I thought this was hysterical that I found a portrait of your grandmother in a flea market in Dublin. And sure enough, she saw the funny side of it and wrote back.
I wonder if it's hanging up in Buckingham Palace somewhere.
I doubt it somehow. Now, I mean, the thing is, what you have to understand is, unless you meet the Queen, she doesn't write directly to you. It's a lady in waiting mm-hmm. that responds on her behalf.
No, I've often wondered about the lady. I've heard about the lady in waiting yeah. that she will write. But do you think the Queen gets? She has her red box, of course, the famous red box that she yeah. allegedly opens every single day.
Yeah.
Do you think she gets to see them and just says the lady?
Oh yeah.
Yes, right back there to Derek.
No, absolutely. The letters I received back were from Mary Morrison, her senior lady in waiting, and they're partly handwritten. So in that instance, it's a direct reply from the Queen.
Okay, so in other words, she yeah. would have said, you know, the lady in waiting would say, well, we have a letter here from Derek, we have a letter
yeah,
here from the...
exactly.
And then she'd ask what they're about.
And
yeah.
what was wonderful after a while, obviously they're private and confidential and I would never read them out, but just say that they started ending...
I reckon the data protection ran out on them today, somehow or another.
Well, yeah, but I suppose that is... respect, I suppose, but
well, I mean,
they would end.
It'd be nice to have them framed and put up somewhere, wouldn't
well,
it?
Well, I have them in a file, so yeah. they're there. But it would end with, "I'm to send you Her Majesty's good wishes and thank you once again for writing as you did." So it was. I always love to see that once again, because it was an acknowledgement of the relationship that had built up.
In other words, she was familiar with the fact that she had replied and written before.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So it wasn't just your standard insert name letter here.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so that's very special, you know, and I think that, I think it also shows, you know, that A, she was accessible, B, she had a sense of humor. And I think she liked the fact that she got a letter every now and again from
some random Irish
site in Ireland. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, but it kind of like found its own momentum, you know, and even my friends would find it hysterically funny, you know, that I'd get a letter back from the Queen. And it is hysterically funny, you know, but I think that's what we forget about people in high position. They're also just human beings. You know,
see, this is the thing. People talk about the fact that she's privileged, and there's no doubt she's been privileged all her life. But in saying that, with that privilege, in particularly in her case, maybe not in the likes of Harry's or the rest of them, but certainly in her case, with that privilege came a huge sacrifice that she never would have had the life that we will have, or, you know, and the freedom. Yeah. You know, to walk into Aldi or to, you know, to go to a gig or, you know, hang around the electric picnic for a while. She's never going to have that life. And she would have had that life for a very short period of time before she became the Queen. And I know she used to go to nightclubs with her sister, with Margaret, at a very young age. They used to sneak out to nightclubs and stuff like that, much to the pissed off Albert quite a lot. But they did it. And she was quite a clever woman, I believe, by the way. She was a mechanic, I believe, during the war or something like that. Or
during the war, you know, played her own part. As soon as she became 18, she signed up. I think, you know, I have friends, you know, with me, you know, from Switzerland, who were saying, you know, when you talk about the Queen, you talk about the Queen. She was like a global Queen. She wasn't, you know, just the Queen of the United Kingdom. You talk about sending condolences to, you know, the people of the United Kingdom. But I think because she has been around for so long, she was a figure in all our lives, and she played a huge part in the history of all our countries. And an interesting thing, which I was talking to your researcher, Ruth, about earlier, she's a symbol of our independence in this country.
And a lot of people might not agree with that, but go on.
Well, no, I'll tell you why. Her father was the last King of Ireland. Her father had the title King of Ireland, and she didn't have the title Queen of Ireland. Mm-hmm. So it was that break with the monarchy.
But the monarchy was only removed from our constitution in, was it 1936, if I can remember rightly? It was still part of our constitution. I know somebody later on will tell me if I'm wrong or right, but I think it was only removed in 36.
But the fact of the matter is her father held the title until he died. Mm. She didn't take on the title.
That's probably what I'm thinking of, yeah.
That's what I mean about her being a symbol of our independence. She did not claim to be the Queen of Ireland.
Do you think her, well, it wasn't an apology, but certainly what she said, you know, in Dublin Castle, but ironically enough, was the headquarters of the British Army at the time. But do you think what she said, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, historical hindsight, we can all see things that we wish we had done differently or not at all. Do you think that was an indirect apology without actually upsetting too many unionists?
Yeah. You see, the Queen, fundamentally, the Queen was speaking as the Queen, not as herself. And she would have been told what to say. You know, she would not.
Well, I think she probably wanted to say something, but would have been told how to word it.
Exactly, you know, and she, you know, she fundamentally would have had to, you know, do what the Prime Minister of the day and the government of the day said, which she was very close to Mary McAleese. Her and Mary McAleese were very good friends, and I think it was very clear from that relationship that she felt an affinity with the Irish people, and she really wanted to come to this country. You know, I think the fact that she made it here. And that she got the reception that she did was something that.
Do you think she was? Do you think she was surprised by that reception? Because there was very. I was on the air at the time, and we kind of covered a bit of it. I was surprised. Actually, there was very little protests.
I think she was. Well, you see, the thing is, again, you know, I think the way we respond to Britain and the United Kingdom nowadays shows how mature we have become as a nation. It reflects on us,
most
as
of
Irish
us.
People.
Most of us.
Well, yeah, absolutely, most of us. But I think as a nation, when you see how the president has responded, how the Taoiseach has responded, how most people in Ireland have responded, what you see in a woman like Queen Elizabeth, which I think is rare in this day and age, is great leadership. I think the world lacks great leaders. And, you know, people were able to look to her and say, this is how it's done. I mean, she's an example of how to lead, of what you do.
Which was certainly dedicated, there's no doubt about that. I mean, literally swore in her 15th prime minister days ago.
I know.
And with a smile and grace, although she must have been in pain because she did have arthritis and gout.
Yeah.
So, you know, she probably knew she was close to the end of her life, and yet she still wanted to do it.
And sometimes, you know, I think particularly in this day and age where we live in such an age of immediacy and everything has to be in the now and everything has to be about us, this idea of sometimes acting selflessly, sometimes putting yourself second. Sometimes
I mean, she could have handed it over to Charles 10 years ago if she wanted to.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a feeling, you know, to be honest, that Charles would be a kind of a bridge between the old and the new. My prediction, if you're interested in it, is that he will be king for 5 years and then he'll abdicate and pass it on to...
it's possible,
You know that I have met Catherine.
Okay, so you met the Duchess of Cambridge, who now, by the way, as far as I know, becomes the Princess of Wales. Is that right?
I don't think it's immediate. Their immediate titles will be the Duke and Duchess of Cornwall and Cambridge. I don't think they immediately become the Prince and Princess of Wales, but they will become the Prince and Princess of Wales, yeah.
Okay, all right. So, and Camilla becomes the Queen...
she's the Queen Consort.
Yes, yeah, so she will never be the Queen, but of course Catherine will.
No, Catherine will be Queen Consort as well. You only become the Queen if you are the...
Okay, so Catherine won't become the Queen. I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, no. The title, the wife of a king is Queen Consort. The Queen, the title Queen is only for the monarch. So the wife of a king is always Queen Consort.
In your view, what happens? So Charles abdicates 5 years, William becomes the King, Catherine becomes the Queen Consort.
Yeah.
If William dies, does Catherine remain as Queen Consort?
No, if William dies, George becomes king.
Oh, okay. So
it only goes down the royal line, yeah.
All right, okay. I was curious about that whole aspect of it, okay.
Because the Queen had no brothers and there were no... so that's why she became the sovereign.
So what was the circumstances in which you met Catherine?
I'm a friend of her mother, Carol, and they were all over for an art exhibition of a mutual friend, the wonderful artist Gemma Billington. And so a few of us had known in advance that she would be there. Carol introduced me to her, and afterwards there was a private dinner, which I was invited to, and so got a chance to talk to her. Now, this was a long time ago. This was before she was with William at the time, but this was about 4 or 5 years before they got married. But I do remember at the time that, you know, she was, you know, she behaved so impeccably, and she was such a lovely, wonderful person. I mean, what you see is what you get. I mean, what you see even on TV is exactly how she is, and I think she'll make an amazing Queen. I think the country will be in safe hands with William.
There's no airs and graces about her, really, is there? You know.
No, you know, she's...
it's ironic I say that about royalty, but there is no airs and graces.
But I think she's solid. I think, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I've never met William, but I think that's the thing about them. They're solid. They understand that in a modern age, monarchy has to be more grounded. And has to be more relatable to people. That's why,
I suppose it's like everything. You know, the church has to be more relatable. Monarchy has to be more relatable. Governments need to be more relatable to the people. Mm-hmm. In an evolving world, you know, that just has to be the way it is. And what do you say to the haters? You know, and they're all over social media. I'm sure you've seen it yourself.
I don't say anything. Just leave them. I mean, these are
people. No, okay. You know? But there are people, right, who are unforgiving. In a sense, let's leave aside the despicable and disgusting comments, right?
Yeah.
But people who will not bury the hatchet, do you believe they deserve, does their argument deserve any credence whatsoever? They say, well, okay, you know, but she was a woman who oversaw a country, you know, an imperialistic country, which took over many countries of the world as part of the Commonwealth, and also obviously Ireland as well, and give us back our six counties, et cetera, et cetera. Is there credibility in that argument for you, or is, as far as you're concerned, is that part of our history and let's go on with unending peace and forget about it?
Look, you can never forget the past, and we should never take away from the fact that people have suffered. You know, people really have suffered. People have suffered on all sides. I personally find the whole notion of colonialism abhorrent. I think what happened to this country at the hands of the British was disgusting and should never have happened. And I don't think that any amount of apologies can undo what happened. But we have to move forward. We have no choice. Ireland is a very distinguished country that plays and hits way above its weight on the international stage because of the kind of people we are, because we are an intelligent, dignified people. And that's the kind of Ireland that I want to be part of and I want to represent and I want people around the world to see. I think people who still feel hatred need to kind of move out of that so that they can move on and live in the now rather than live in the past, but never forgetting the past.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. There's Derek Byrne, academic and journalist, talking about his interaction with the Queen, essentially becoming a PayPal. Or pen pal. Did I say PayPal? Pen pal. After the break, by the way, I will be talking to Fran King, friend of the show, who's been in here many times. Fran plays with the classic Beatles. And surprisingly enough, he actually played with the Queen, or for the Queen. Now, if you're thinking of the most unusual way you could possibly end up meeting the Queen, by the way, I often wonder, is the cliche, gone to London to see the Queen, is that now gone? Do we have to get rid of that one? But anyway, a more unusual way, Fran King, who is a member of the classic Beatles and the Bootleg Beach Boys and many other bands who we've had in our studio on numerous occasions here in Ireland's Classic Hits, joins me on the air. Good afternoon to you, Fran.
How are you?
Now, Fran, people will know you. You've been in the studio many times with numerous different bands.
Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose the one that you were kind of most popular with was the classic Beatles.
Yeah, yeah.
Yourself and the lads, Scott and the boys, and you went out doing your tours. And you, George Martin thought you were the best Beatles, I suppose, that he had ever seen. That, you know, that you could replicate these songs perfectly. So much so, you explain the rest of the story.
Yeah, we had the pleasure of working with them twice. First time in 1999 for two shows at the National Concert Hall. When he was basically returned from live work with it, and his son Giles was on the show as well. But and after that, he came back for a UCD thing that we also worked with. But in the meantime, he'd recommended us, or somebody had got in touch with him from the royal family. I think it might have been a woman by the name of Lady Sarah, who's a cousin of the Queen, who runs a huge event organization company in the UK. And they had said something just to George Martin, and he had said, well, you got to get these guys. So we weren't told who the client was by the company until we arrived at the Ritz Hotel in 2004, and we were getting shown around where we were going to set up, and there was police cordons, and we thought, you know, Madonna was in England at the time. We thought, oh, it's going to be a gig from Madonna, you know?
And so you guys, these are like secret gigs. You had no idea who you were going to be playing to.
No, it was a private family.
I hope you were being paid well, by the way, but it was a private gig.
It was a private thing, and all of our families had been contacted by MI5 or the background checks done, because I know my parents had said to me, post all this, had said, I was wondering why we're getting calls from the UK from some police service checking on phone records or something like that. But anyway, there was a bit of background check obviously done on everybody. We got there and we were being shown around the area where we were going to play and where the stage was, and the Ritz. We said, geez, this is really glitzy. And the guy who was kind of saying, you know, they kind of had added on this kind of awning at the side. And he said, look what we've done for Her Majesty. And we were like, what? So that was the first inclination that we were playing for the Queen. And in the meantime, we'd looked up the Royal Command performance that the Beatles had played, and we did that exact set list because we heard she was a big fan of all that stuff. So
because she was a fan of the Royal Command performance when the Beatles played,
yes,
she wanted, well, the best she could get, or the closest, and George Martin, the Beatles manager, thought, you guys are the best you can get. So can you remember the set, by the way?
Can I remember the set?
Yeah, was there many? Was it a full set or just five or six songs?
No, we played for about an hour and a bit, and believe it or not, it was a coronation anniversary, is what I gathered from the evening. And it was interesting to watch from the stage before we went on how people were interacting with her, because they were obviously, women were curtsying and all this business. But I could tell from her body language, she was telling them, you don't have to do that. This isn't an official thing.
It's a casual event.
This is a casual event.
Put your jeans on.
Yeah, yeah. She wasn't wearing a crown or any of that business. So it was all very informal, I guess. And I'd never seen that.
And what was it? Was it like was it dinner and drinks first, and then you guys come on?
It was a whole evening. So it was like a gala. It was like a dinner, There was lots of different entertainment. There was up close magic and stuff like that going on. Guys going around the room doing these, you know, these moving these spheres around. It was very, very all evening of entertainment, and we were only a little part of it. We were an hour and a half of it in the middle, but it was all day and, you know, all the next day, kind of getting set up and getting through all the various securities and the different checks that we had to go through. But watching, observing all these people and how they operate behind closed doors was very interesting. And to see her dance for the entire set, was incredible. Like,
so you're there with your Beatles regalia, the wigs and everything. You of course are Paul McCartney, Sir Paul McCartney, and you've got the wig on, the whole bit, and all the regalia, and you're playing away. And literally, she's how far? Like 10 foot away from you.
At one stage, about 7 feet, because the stage, she was kind of dancing around. You know, we were doing stuff like Tilda Was You, kind of really kind of waltzy, kind of nice stuff.
And who is she dancing with, by the way?
She was just dancing with Viscounts and different dignitaries. She didn't once dance with Philip. Now, he was on the dance floor for a little bit, but he came up to
me. But every woman apart from her.
Yeah, exactly. That's, believe it or not. And he came up to our sound man twice to complain that we were too loud. But she didn't give a bother. She was dancing away, and she stopped and clapped between every song. It was really odd to see the woman who's on all the English money standing there in front of you, kind of clapping away and enjoying the gig. It was very, very surreal. But
and I'm going to pay you at the end of this. My picture is on every note I'll give you.
Well, we got to stay in the Ritz that night, which was unbelievable. Part of the whole setup, you know. Yeah. So that was incredible.
And did she pass any comment or anything? Did she say anything to you?
Well, at the very end, we had to stand there in the, like you see in those kind of '60s things when the Beatles were actually standing there, and Prince Philip and herself were walking to the exit, which was literally like thunder and lightning, full of flash bulbs going off. And we were stood there in our Beatle costumes and wigs, and Prince Philip stopped right in front of us and said he believed that we were from Northern Ireland for some strange reason. And Scott from the band was saying, no, we're actually from the Republic. Oh, you're from the Republic. And she just looked at us. She didn't make any she was stood there now about 4 feet at this stage away from us. And he remarked then, oh, he didn't know we were from the Republic. And we said, yeah. And he said, yeah, you were very good, but you made a terrible racket. And without missing a beat, we broke into the Beatles. Well, it wasn't me, it was him. Yeah. And they laughed. The two of them laughed and moved on. And that was kind of it, really.
Yeah, okay.
All over in a flash.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a kind of, it was probably something quite surreal, to, as you rightly said, to see this person that you would normally see in a stamp or whatever.
For that kind of information to be dropped on you at the gig, it was like no pressure or anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It was very strange.
And did you have to sign any NDAs before or after of what you've seen, or the antics that you've seen?
No, because I guess it was all very, the pomp and ceremony was all there, even though it was all very played down. There was no curtsying needed or any of that stuff that goes on, I guess, when it's a public event. So in that sense, it was really interesting to see how they all interacted, and it seemed very casual. And as I said, there was no...
Just like your average wedding, I suppose, Like a high-class wedding, yeah.
Now, they were all dressed in ball gowns and black tie and all that business, but it was very... There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of dignitaries there.
Hope you're well fed on the night as well, were you? I'm sure you
had. We did. We had. We were there from like 10 o'clock in the morning till the next day. So it was. It was an interesting thing, and we got to meet a lot of people from that company who booked these party planners, and they were very sweet. And we did a bit of work with them in Wales after that, stuff like that. But not for a royalty. After that was our only encounter with.
So that's your claim to fame, Anne, is it? Yeah.
Well, it's a strange one. You see, I'm not a monarchist by any means. You know how divisive that is in politics and stuff like that. I wouldn't be, you know, I don't like you. I heard you talking there about Meghan Markle and all these people. To me, they're all like the Kardashians. I don't buy into any of that stuff. It's not my cup of tea. I thought it was interesting in 2011 when she came and she spoke in Irish when she came to Ireland, and it kind of, you know, I suppose, in ceremony and in symbolism, kind of did a bit of healing from a lot of years of pain, you know, to that point. So I thought that was interesting, but I wouldn't be a monarchist or, you know, any of that stuff. But it was an interesting...
And as a person, what do you think? I mean, obviously we're talking about her because she's passed away at 96. And don't get me wrong, 96, a lot of people said it today as well. It's a good long life. You can't ask for much more than that in life, really. Really. I think we'd all be happy if we got to that age.
Absolutely.
And certainly be happy if we got to that age at her health. Because up to her a couple of months ago, she was perfectly healthy. So,
well, she met Liz Truss the other day. I know she looked a bit ill there, but... Yeah. But like you said, to be still doing ceremonial things and be in office, like being in employment till you're 96, is some innings. You know, there's something in that, all right.
Yeah. In relation to, I suppose, playing, you know, for the Queen or as a part. But what I'm trying to say is, as a person, if you leave aside the fact that she's a monarch, as a person, what do you think of her achievement? I mean, the fact that she, you know, 70 years on the throne, 70 years.
Yeah, 15 prime ministers. It's interesting. And you see television shows like The Crown and it kind of, I suppose, encapsulates all that in that Hollywood sort of way. You know, it lived through interesting times, I guess you could say, and lived through very changing times very rapidly within her monarchy, I guess. And here, obviously, as well, in politics in Ireland as well, in Northern Ireland. But, it must have been a strange life, you know, to be born into that, and that's your
I mean,
lot.
And people do, and I said this earlier on to Derek, people say, oh, you know, a very privileged woman. But I don't know whether I'd like that sort of privilege or not.
No, you get the impression from the TV show, they hint at the fact that, you know, it's something that that's kind of imposed on you. You don't really make a decision for that. You're born for that sort of thing.
I mean, you look at, you know, the Duchess of Cambridge, or Catherine, as people call her, Her kids. At that recent gig that was on, I can't remember the centenary or whatever it was, the 70 years.
Oh, yeah.
The kids were just, I don't know, they're about 5 or 6 years of age. And one of them was messing on the seat. And they were all over the papers the next day. So, in other words, from a very young age.
It doesn't marry up, it's a strange one. You know, and all that pomp and stuff that comes with the etiquette and the, you know, the kind of stoic behavior, it's all very strange, and I guess you have to be.
So that's what I'm saying. You are for that
you're,
privilege.
You're born into that, and you're trained in that. And
but
you know,
sacrifice a lot, don't you, for that privilege?
Yeah. Well, she was coronated in the 50s, so that's literally her lifetime. But she was as that job.
I'm not too sure how old she would have been. I suppose she would have been in her mid
20s. And then you know, her dad, was it her dad had abdicated, so he'd had enough of it. So you know. Mm.
He had cancer, I believe, didn't he? In the end, he died of cancer, but he was quite sick.
It's a strange one. But monarchies are a very strange thing. Anyway, we just came back from Denmark playing over there, and they've got a queen and stuff like that. It's all very odd. And I mean, I'm sure it's brilliant for tourism and all that stuff, and it's invaluable in that sense. But as you know, there's no real political clout anymore. In that sense, it's all taken away with government and stuff. But needless to say, anecdotally, it was very interesting. It's an interesting because there's not many people in our business, especially from Ireland, who've had the chance to be kind of that up close and personal, I guess, in that respect.
Yeah, just to clarify, for those who are royalists, she was 25, 1952.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 70 years. 70 years. Well, I was going to say to the day, but it was February the 6th, so it's been a little bit more than 70 years.
It's more than some people's lifetime.
It's more than some people's lifetime. But I've often wondered, by the way, and there was one question I used to always ask, does the Queen think the world smells of fresh paint? Because everywhere she goes, some guy's about 20 foot in front of her painting a wall. I'm nearly there. You know, and is there really red carpets everywhere? You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, butlers everywhere. I mean, when we were sound checking, we were, you know, also having a little bite to eat. And there was a guy going around holding your glass. And it was really, there was a guy allotted to every member of the band to kind of carry your drinks and, you know, go in the lift with you. It was very, very strange. Yeah. Very strange.
Fran King from the classic Beatles. Thank you very much indeed, Fran. And after the break, by the way, I want to take some of your calls. Some people are suggesting we should have a day of mourning or at least a minute silence in respect of the death of the Queen. But what do you think? The number is 087-188-0008. Lots and lots of text coming in. Somebody says, well done. I think it's wonderful to hear Irish radio talk so warmly about the British Queen. I am originally from England, but I live in Ireland, and I'm delighted to hear the Irish media being quite respectful. I didn't really expect that, although there has been nasty comments online, which I've chosen to ignore. Chosen to ignore them yourself, to be honest with you.
Hi, Niall. Enjoying the show today. Very upset about to hear about the Queen. It's 18 here. You know me, I love the royals. But, I mean, as Derek said, you can't forget, about all of the history. But at the same time, like, it is history. And I often feel as well, people tend to forget, you talked about the Queen's speech in Dublin Castle. The Queen's own uncle was murdered by the IRA off the coast of Sligo, if you remember, Lord Mountbatten. So she had her own, she had a personal experience of that, you know, history and violence and everything else. A lot of what people are talking about is like way, way in the past. But she was able to put her own personal issues aside in relation to Lord Mountbatten and continue with her duty and come and visit Ireland. And she had an amazing time. She still kept in touch with the guy from the fish market in Cork. So she said, and William said, when he came here, that it was one of her favourite visits that she ever had. Anyway, I think she's incredible. We'll miss her. Thanks, Niall. Bye.
There you go. She does actually still keep, well, she did still keep in touch with the fishmonger. Let me go to Brian. Brian, you're in Ireland's Classic Kids. How are you doing, Brian?
Hi, Niall. Not too bad at all.
Good. Brian, bad. I mean, I know a lot of Irish people are passing on their condolences, more so to the British people, I suppose, because, you know, she was their queen for so long. But, I mean, should we have a day of mourning, a minute's silence, or should we have to be respectful to our next-door neighbours?
If the British want to have a month of mourning, let them have it. Like, but why should the British do it?
Well, they will have it. I mean, they've 10 days of mourning, but they probably have 3 days off work next week or at the time of the funeral. So,
that's for the workers there, like, but why do I all have to do it? Like, I mean,
well, you don't have to do it. I'm only asking a question. You don't have to.
Yeah. Sorry.
You can go to work, Brian, if you want.
But I mean, we're still tipping the cap to the forelock, like, to the British, you know what I mean?
And is there anything wrong with that?
There is, of course. We're in a republic. Britain is a monarchy. We are a republic. Like,
I'm aware of that.
Mean, Britain has been in Ireland and are still in Ireland. They have 6 counties up in the north. People are cribbing about Russia going into Ukraine, which they're right about. But England are still in Ireland. They still have 6 counties belong to us. I mean, the last speaker there was talking about Lord Mountbatten. I mean, the British Army killed an awful lot of people in Northern Ireland over the last 800 years or whatever they've been inside in this country, where they plundered and took everything that they could from us. And they were supposed to bend the knee and say, oh, we're sorry, and all that kind of stuff. Like, I mean...
But when we look at the world around us, and by the way, Ireland wasn't the only country taken over by the British. I mean, the British, of course, were quite famous for plundering countries at one stage in their history. That's all changed. We've moved on. History has moved on. And I'm not saying we should ever forget all the men and the women who died for their freedoms, for our freedoms, etc., etc. And hopefully in the future, we may have a 32-county Ireland. Because I don't think the British really want it, to be honest with you, at this point. I think it's cost them too much money and they're sick of the moaning. So, I mean, we have to look forward and not backwards. It, you know, is it? I mean, when we hit recession in 2009, 2010, the first country to help us out financially was Britain.
Yeah, well, it's very nice of them. I mean, they still have the 6 counties. Yeah. They still have the 6 counties, like, and they haven't given it back to us yet.
Well, but it's not just a case of... I mean, and the Queen would know that, and every Prime Minister knows that. It's not just a case of going to, you know, ringing up Micheál Martin and saying, "How are you, Micheál? Listen, those 6 counties, yeah. Listen, do you want them back tomorrow?" That just can't happen. There's a long process to that, because there are people up there who are happy to be declared as British, because it's been so long, it's generational. So it's not just a case of giving them back. There's more to it than that.
But not even a process of doing that is happening at the moment.
But I think it will, Brian, in a very short period of time. I think that process will start, and I think the border poll will start very soon. Brian, stay there for a second, and I understand the point you're making. Mark, you're on Ireland's Classic Kids. Aidan, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Niall. Thanks for having me on.
Mark, do you believe... I'm sorry I have a very short amount of time here today, but do you believe that we should have some sort of minute's silence, day of mourning, half day of mourning, or in respect of our British colleagues?
Well, I've lived here for about 20 years, and I don't see there's any reason why you should... from even a respect point of view. I think if people want to do that, then, you know, there are churches and, you know, you can do it in the privacy of your own home. But I personally don't think there's any need for it. I mean, of course, Northern Ireland, they may well want to do something themselves, and I think they should, because, you know, they are part of
the 50% of them,
Kingdom.
Yeah.
But certainly not here. I don't think there would be any... need or reason.
But we are very closely aligned with Great Britain now. I mean, I know we've had very bad history in the past, but not now.
I don't think there's a reason why you should. I mean, people can pay the respects. I paid my respects in my head to the Queen and her family, and my wife has done the same, and she's Irish, and she loves the royal family and all what it sort of
stands for,
encompasses, and her family is, well, she's in her family is in the history books along with many of the major Republicans who fought for your independence. Mm-hmm. So you know,
Do you not think it would be a good sign of solidarity with the British people if the British thought that the Irish government had decided, you know, to have a day of mourning? Do you not think that would be a good thing to do? To show that, you know, the past is the past and we want to get on, we want to move forward. You know, we don't ever want to go back to where we were back in the 1970s, particularly, you know, with the IRA and bombings and all that kind of carry on. Would that not be a good thing to do?
Yeah, of course. Anything that heals is a good thing, always. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it needs to be shoved down people's throats.
Okay.
I think it should be a personal choice, to be honest.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much indeed. Brian, thank you very much indeed. I've got to go into a break. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping. Number is 087-188-0008.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show.